So we had a big bed net. That was standard in this country. White, kind of, you know, regular. Didn't you ever see those large bed nets to put down over the bed to keep the mosquitoes away? Everybody in Alaska seemed to have them. Well, we had one, and we built us up a little deal off of the ground, not much, very far off, but, you know, so that we could get our bed springs down and the mattress, and then we put some little posts at the corners. Then off from the center of it, you know, we had a taller one where that we could have a little rope run through there to hold the netting up off of us. Now, this was on the 5th of the July, and so anyway, we woke up the next morning, and it was, I'm not kidding, it was dark under the, and in under that net. And Brenton, he said to me, "Hey, I didn't think it got dark in Fairbanks in the summertime." I said, "I didn't either." "Well, it's sure dark in here." And he put his hand up against that bedding, and there must have been a million mosquitoes on top of that. Yeah, they just
formed a net
and stuff. Yeah, you know, we could see, but it seemed dark under there. "Well," he said, "now how are we going to do this?" And he said, "You build a fire, and I'll mix up the pancake batter." And what the world was it we used? Citronella or something to smear something around on her. You know, that is the only kind of stuff they had.
Yeah, mosquito repellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's coming back now. I noticed the stores are
effective. I was cooking the bacon, you know, and I had an extra pan there to put hotcakes on. Finally, Brendan said, and he'd pick them up. "The devil with you. We'll eat you." And after we got them cooked, we're sitting there and we'd put out look, see if they'd pull out mosquito out of the pancake.
Fried mosquitoes.
Well, we got by till that night, and then we got a little deal fixed better, you know. Mm-hmm. But the mosquitoes was really tough. And
see, how far out from town would that have been?
Right, straight out through here.
It's out in here somewhere. You're talking about Badger Road.
Mm-hmm. So should I throw Mrs. Nordale in on this about now?
Oh, that's up to her.
Well, I can't leave my relative out.
Oh, okay.
That makes her mad. Well, anyway, when we just about got our cabin finished, and the wind was a-blowing, you know, a nice sunny day, and mosquitoes weren't bad. So we'd gone for a hike up to Jack Horn's and get a few vegetables and then came on back home. And as you're coming down the road, well, here was a big car and a man and a woman and a little boy, there's Nordale's son, Tony. He was a little fella then. And so Jelmer, he knew we were strangers, or we were strangers here, and came over and met us and started talking with us. He said, "You got to have a cabin out here someplace?" "Oh, yeah, we built a little cabin up this little road going up in on the other side of the slough." Mm-hmm. And, well, he said, "Would you mind having a bite with us?" Because he said, "Dessa always makes up far more than we can eat." And yeah, she said, "That's fine. Come on, boy, sit down." So we sat down there and ate. And Then we talked about various things, and oh, she said, it'd be nice to have a place out here like this, away from town. And Brenton and I, we got quite a bang out of that, but we didn't laugh. Because town was just a little village in those days.
Yeah, so you're talking about that 1940, it was probably less than 4,000 people, 5,000 maybe.
So anyway, Oria gets mad when I talk about how small Fairbanks is in those days, but I'll get through this in a hurry. And so then we got back to the mosquitoes just before we got through eating and how bad they were and our experience that first night and all that. And Ledessa says, she was talking to Brenton, and while I had already talked and discussed with her and Jelmer about if she wanted to have a place out here. I said, well, how about this one? I said, we just plan on hanging out here this winter, coming and going, and we'll be going to university and have no time for to mess around too much. But she says, this is your cabin, everything here. And so I said, nah, Brenton said, one winter here is enough for me. Anyway, we finally agreed. Well, she said, oh, she always gets excited about everything. Jelmer and the old, or I mean, Decim, or the Decim. And, Jelmer, what do you think about it? Now, wait a minute, he said, let's think this over. He had a wonderful habit. I don't care if it was a little thing or a big thing. Let's think it over for a couple of weeks. So, in our discussion, though, and Brenton was talking with her alone, he said, you know, she's a funny woman. I said, I think she's more or less an intelligent acting woman. Well, he said, you know, when I was talking with her, and she said, don't you have a Buick? And he just said, no. And then after she left, but why, we don't even have a bicycle out here, let alone a Buick. And so then next time we went up to see Jack Horn, Brenton brought it up. And Jack about busted up. Why, talking about the Buick and the mosquitoes. She meant Buick.
Oh.
Oh, Jack about cracked up. Yes. So, and he had somebody showed us what the stuff was. Didn't take us long to get a little bit, too. But anyway, so here we're getting along late in the fall, and Jelmer and her come back with another basket, and we decided, look, Miss Lenora, you can have this place. We're generous. We'll give you this ground, 160 acres. So, but anyway, well, she said, you just can keep your cabin there for all of us and come back again. And stay, and it's yours. So in a few days, why, a red-headed young forester came out, and he was looking for Brenton and I, and he said, one of you fellows Hayden? And I said, I am. What do you want? Or what can we do for you? And, well, he said, you know, we have a CC camp that we've been building, and daggone government kind of let me down. They figured that up here they didn't need to hire a cook, a professional cook. And so, ready? Okay. And I said, wait a minute, I primarily came to go to the university for at least 1 year, or until April anyway. And what makes you think I could handle a job? 40 men? that was what was supposed to be the size of the camp. Well, we usually had 30, and then ones that local fellows, you know, brought it up to 40, but they is normally there for dinner, and that is a free dinner for them. But and I said, I never cook for that many people. And, well, you've been highly recommended. At Dirty Bums, you know, I traveled with, see. And maybe Culp put a bug in the ear, too, you know. And my donut factory. Well, he said, look, we have forms and stuff for to fill out to order the supplies. Now, I said, the local stores was all out for the CC camp. Now they don't think much of the idea, but he said, we will be buying reasonable amount. You know, we'll have a fund where we can buy a reasonable amount of things from them. And but so he said, you can fill out these forms, order the food, and we'll have to buy locally here until, you know, ours comes in. And then he said, you can do this at night and go to school in the daytime.
When were you going to sleep?
And he said, you can find time to, you're a young man, you can find time to sleep. Well, I said, oh, I'll give a thought. And he came back again, and I said, okay, I'll tell you. He said, we'll just give you help for everything, all kinds of help, you know, that from the fellows that's in the camp.
Yeah, now where was this camp located in it, relationship to Fairbanks? Was it a reasonable distance away? Or
oh, it is right at the, how could you describe it? It is over... back away from the cheetah on the other side, off in behind, there was a,
You say it was walking distance then?
No, it wasn't over a quarter of a mile from town, was it? The most over there. You weren't in the camp? That's right, they didn't allow wax in there.
I was in school.
It was back... you go, we went around through by the railroad station and down off from the railroad tracks down in there a little ways.
Oh, and so right on the edge of...
On the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I got to get on with this thing. But so I set it up that, sure, I would write up the menus and things like that. And then I'd do the baking and, you know, and grab a little sleep when I could. And it was never a big concern with me whether I got a full year in at a university or not. I was taught by my mean old ancestors, get in as much as you can. Get your books, learn as much as you can, and then go on from there, see?
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, why I did that up until around, in April.
Of what year? That
39.
39.
And... So, a man contacted me and wanted me to go to Circle Hot Springs. And I think it was Jack Boswell. You ever hear of him? Maybe knew him.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's a university name, Boswell. It's one of the early... graduates of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And F.E. Company. Jeff.
Well, anyway, I think he has a son around there yet. Now, it is
Robert.
A father, more doctor than to the one. I don't know. He could have gone to the university, but he worked for the FE company. Then they had another, his brother-in-law was Bill Shoddy. He was a mining engineer. And then, you know Olga Steger?
Mm-hmm.
Her father, Little Pete Steger, was the third partner. And then the fella throwing in some money, too, to come out on when we'd have cleanups was, what is his name, Tom McKinnon? And there's four of them, and so he said, how would you like to go out? Now, he said, we have a real good cook, but he's finicky. And he don't want to go out till you fellas get the mess hall up, completed. So when he walks in, it's a nice new mess hall, but he said, we'll have a lot of men to get it up pretty quick. But he said, how would you like to go out and cook for those fellas in a little log cabin? Or there's three or four cabins there, you know, log cabins. And we, so then when we get those all up, you'll be a miner, you know. Everything from running a little bulldozer to what's needed. And I said, okay. It was, in those days, you know, 7 days a week, 10 hours a day.
Yeah, it was good summer employment.
And it was $1 an hour, and then I got an extra hour after they got to mining, because I was the only one foolish enough wanted to crawl up to the top of the drag line and inspect the equipment and lubricate it and pump, you know, the grease into the machinery and fill everything with gas and oil and check the sluice boxes and those things happened to be familiar with, see. So, you see, it was pretty good money, but anyway, so that's what I done that summer. And unfortunately, the outfit went bankrupt. But we didn't lose any money. Every time we had to clean up, we had a great big pan full of gold. But you don't want to remember, it was, what is it, $36 an ounce?
Yeah, I can say it was not that much in those days.
But
yeah.
The thing that busted it up was there's two anxious. Not Little Pete Steger wasn't. If they'd have went along with his rules, I hope that nobody that listens to this or reads it gets their feelings hurt. But according to what I'd been taught, the little bit I was in these other mining camps outside, you had to have the water all away from, you know, your cut, and then up here you had to have the ground thawed all the way down. Sometimes I'd be out there, that D7 bulldozer with a router, you know, on the back end, is ripping up frozen muck. Don't you see? There are other people that went in there for a number of years after that. Now, I tell you, everybody from Carl Heflinger on, well, say, Hayden, you should stay out of mining. Well, then, that winter, I was to go out, and I wanted to go to school, but people kept offering me jobs at fairly decent money. And so a fella came to me, they had what they called Hall and Johnson Logging Company. And that was down up away from the Tananaw, and you went down and around, and where you go down long above old Chena City. You've been down that road?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
Chena Pump Road.
And then you went up and around a few miles down along, and oh, I tell you, there was beautiful timber back in there.
Mm-hmm. Probably that's the Rosie Creek area.
Yes, that's exactly where it was. She's been in the bush.
I've been there by boat.
But you know, really, that was my dream of Alaska, down there in that road. And that, I didn't expect that big timber there, but there was no end of moose. There were wolves. There were lynx cats. And but they wanted me to, first I was to run the, you know, be a logger. Then the fellow was cooking. No, he changed his mind. So you'll see how that happened to me. I was back cooking again.
Well, that's what comes with being so versatile.
And, but I tell you, you could just go out there and look around. And here would be a moose or lynx cat or, you know, a wolf.
Yeah, before people moved in.
So, well, I stayed there till, oh, I guess, spring came early and they had to quit, softened up. And so the fellows, some of them, they take some of this wood that is dry and cut it up and bring it in to town. Everybody is working there. They had the privilege of getting their year's wood is laying around on the ground anyway, you know. And so the only little funny thing, well, there's two funny things that happened there. Why, there's a young fellow, was related to, I think, a nephew of Lou Hall, that came up from down in the States, and he said, I'd like to catch one of those lynx. And Otto Bayless, Baylesses is still around, mm-hmm, both family, and he's a good old guy, but he had quite a sense of humor. And but he's always a hard-working, you know, good guy. And so when the kid said that, he said, if you catch one of those lynx, boy, I'll eat the tail off of it while it's alive. So about 2 weeks later, the kid had the lynx. And there was an old trapper, you know, that happened to be in the camp, too, working there. And he took this kid out and he showed him how to get that, trap the lynx with snares. So then they had a habit of, after dinner, why they'd go over into their bunkhouses where the men stayed and relax for a while. And so the first one to go to sleep always was old Otto. So they turned the lights out and went outside and got, oh man. Anyway, they got this lynx on a pole. They had his feet tied together. And so they carried it in and they slid it under Otto's bed or bunk, see, and they had the lights off in there other than just a very dim kerosene. And then this old trapper, he got down and he grabbed that lynx by the tail and he twisted his tail real hard and the lynx screamed to the high heavens. And the next thing, Otto jumped up, bumped his head on the bunk above him and came running in to the cookhouse. I was still up working around in there. And so, boy, he said, I could murder a couple of guys.
Yes, too. See, now, during time that Quick was mining and cooking and doing everything else. You were
going to
school here in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. That would be the recently school. Vacated
Maine,
Old Maine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And that housed all grades.
All grades.
So you completed your high school there.
Mm-hmm.
What was life like for young people in Fairbanks in those days? What did you do? Oh, for entertainment. I'm sure you worked when you could, as you mentioned earlier on.
I had that all written down if you want to see it. Would you like to just see
it? No.
Boy, what am I going to say? I'm so tired now. It's an awful lot. My sister and I both worked and went to school, and we didn't have a happy home life.
Mm.
And my father was, he installed the first projection in the Empress Theater. And we spent many nights up there watching the movies. This is when I came back to Alaska, you know, when I was born in Fairbanks.
Right, and you left for a while and came back.
Right, uh-huh. And so then all I can remember is that I worked all the time when I was going to school. But they did have school dances, and I went to a few of them when my stepmother didn't insist that I had to work. Mm. And
by work, you mean you did things at the movie theater?
Babysat.
Oh.
Babysat and housework.
Mm-hmm.
Housework every weekend and babysat.
Mm.
And then when I graduated from high school, I went into the hospital and worked there. It was all through the summer and into the up until the first of the year.
And this would be St. Joseph Hospital.
1941, yes. Uh-huh. I worked in surgery, cleaning instruments and scrubbing the floor and so forth. Then I went out on the floor and helped. I made beds and helped the patients with writing letters and cleaning up the, I scrubbed all the floors, the hallway and everything, and would fix little dishes for them in the kitchen, mm-hmm. because the kitchen was closed. And then I would do the laundry on Monday. Everybody did in the hospital in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I was able to get my teeth fixed, that's what I had to do with the money that I earned working there and for Nordale's. That was Alden Nordale.
Mm-hmm. So this would be the brother of...
The brother of Jelmer. Right, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, I'm trying to think of her first name. It's Mary and Jim's mother.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't realize there were two brothers.
Oh, yes, there were.
So it's clear.
And then there was also a sister, Mary Nordale, who lives in the States now. And I worked there taking care of the children. And she also was a school teacher, by the way, the same as Ladessa was.
Mm-hmm. This is in the public schools in Fairbanks?
Yes, and then she also became, she was commissioner before Ladessa was.
The sister-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Catherine, her name was Catherine, that's what it was, Catherine Nordale.
Nordale.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she... what I did for her was I would babysit for her children, cook their meals, and do a little cleanup for the housework.
Mm-hmm.
And because she wasn't able to be home with them, so I would do
working
that.
Working mother,
mm-hmm.
which
right.
I guess was not too common.
Well,
days.
And her husband was dead by then, so.
So she had to.
Mm-hmm, she had to, mm-hmm. right. And so then the next semester I started out the university. And went for one semester in 42 to the university, and then went out to the base and worked.
Oh, and that's where Cliff comes in again.
Well, actually, I met Cliff in the summer before, because my father invited him over to the house. Because
he was wanting to get rid of the daughter.
Mary Alpha's daughter.
Wasn't trying to get rid of me. But he always invited people over. We would maybe have just enough food for the four of us, and he'd always invite people over to have dinner. That's the way my father was. Everybody came first. And so Cliff was one of the people that he had invited over. And when I came home from work, I don't remember what I was doing that day, but anyway, I came in the back door, and my stepmother said, get the coffee and pass it around and make cinnamon toast for the people, that your dad's guests. And so I did. And I went out, and that's the first time I saw Cliff. And I think you had your head shaven, didn't you? Didn't you have your head shaven that time? Wasn't your head shaved?
Oh, I had it clipped down pretty close.
Oh, yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
I was one of the original hippies in Petersburg. By far.
Well, he had a beard.
I'd go for any kind of a little old funny thing. So one night I was along with a buddy of mine, and he had real curly hair, and we went in the barber shop, and I said, I wish I had curly hair like that. And the old barber said, I tell you, you can have. If you let me get your, shave your head, and then get a, he had in this barber shop a little liquor store, and take some of this very expensive whiskey, and every morning and evening, rub your head with it. That only went a time or two, because the other guys caught me doing it. They took the bottle away from me and set on me and drank the whiskey.
I was going to say, I bet somebody drank the whiskey.
My whiskers and hair came out at the same time. And what was it, 30 years later or 25 that we went down there later, and this woman came up, threw her arms around me. Oh, whiskers!
Another nickname.
Yeah. Okay, then from working on the base, I went from purchasing and supply to, we ran away and got married. And then when I came back, I went into Lieutenant Ashlock's office in the post office. And I was hired as his secretary, and to do censoring mail. So I got pregnant, and the first thing you know, I the gal that was in there kept insisting I had to eat all the time. So I got too huge. I just gained 75 pounds, and so he said, I guess it embarrassed him, and he said, I don't think you better stay on working because you embarrass the men. So I had to quit, and I really needed the money really bad, because Cliff was in the service by then. He'd already signed up.
But you were still at Ladd Field.
Yes, he was still there. He had signed up to go with the Air Command, though. You had signed up with Gaffney at that time, and to fly. And I didn't know a thing about it when we ran off and got married. He didn't tell me. And so he was in the service and not with me. So I was living alone. And it was very hard to find some place to live. And my aunt let me live in the building next to her.
This would be your Aunt Blanche?
My Aunt Blanche, right. Mm-hmm. And it was not modern. It was an outside toilet and a little pitcher pump in the corner. And, she did have a kitchen stove, coal and wood. And then there was another wood stove in the living room. And there was just the three rooms, a little small room in the back for the bed and closet, and then the kitchen in between, and then the living room.
Mm-hmm. Railroad car style.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So anyway, that was our first home. When we first got married, we rented a place for a couple months, but they were ready to tear it down. And that's where I was so ill when we first got married. I got the flu and was unconscious for quite a while. And my aunt Edith, who is my dad's sister also, came and took care of me, and I was, unconscious for a number of days. And then when I did come to, why, I was bleeding so bad, and my back was just in terrible pain. So she put hot cloths and towels on my back. And I don't think you want any of this stuff, do you? Anyway, let's see. We'll go back to working. Then when the baby, our first child came, Clifford Lee, the flight surgeon is the one that delivered him at the hospital. And but that's another thing. I had a hard time with my labor, and you probably don't even want that.
Well, this would be a no. See, was there Bassett Hospital at that point?
No.
Talking about St. Joseph's.
I'm talking about St. Joseph's. And, mm-hmm. and you see, I'd worked there, mm-hmm. and they told me at that time that they would not accept the military.
So you were a military.
Payment.
Oh.
Yes,
wasn't that something?
They would not accept it, even though I had worked there.
Isn't that?
And sister always used to call me Manchu, which is my little cabbage,
mm-hmm.
When I did work there. That was the head sister. And anyway, she said, no, we will not accept it. So that was a real problem
mm-hmm.
to try, especially since I had to quit work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really had a very hard time. I did, you know, while he was in the service and trying to make ends meet.
Right, yeah, tough mm-hmm. times.
Yeah.
When did you homestead your...
Okay, well, he had taken it out before we were married, didn't you? What was that, 1940?
January of 1940.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
I had the impression it was a different place, but it was right
no,
here.
No, it was right here. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, it was right here, and... But he couldn't prove up on it, you know, going in the service and everything.
Yeah, he didn't have the time to.
No, there was no way that he could do it. And so then after he was out of the service in 1945, by that time we had two children. And then we did prove up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was cleared all the way back on both sides of the road, Badger Road.
Mm-hmm.
And... the ground was planted to barley, oats, and wheat.
Wheat. Now, this is a requirement that would be the same in the lower 48.
Yes,
so there was
right.
no special provisions for
no.
Alaska homestead.
No.
Which,
well, because he had taken it out before the war, he was not allowed to homestead the same way as the military did after the war.
Oh, yes, I heard someone tell about that.
You could,
yes.
even after the war, or during the, you know, if you hadn't homesteaded before the war, you could, as a GI, you could go and homestead a piece of ground, and that was yours, and then you had 5 years to do anything with it.
And that would mean build a suitable house that you
but,
could live in.
That didn't apply to me because I already had homesteaded it.
So you
know,
went by the old
a filed, I'd say.
The old rules.
Right.
Having to plant barley, wheat, and
mm-hmm.
so on, which
mm-hmm.
the others didn't have to do. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What about the amount of acreage that you could acquire? Was that the amount of acreage you could acquire, was it 160?
Have you got a cut off?
No. So, under the old rules, a person could apply for 160 acres and then follow the stipulations that the government had for proving up.
Mm-hmm. But now you see, the old rules were, 320 acres.
Mm-hmm. Jack Horn.
You see, Jack Horn and Badger
Harry
had 320
Badger
acres.
And the man across
and,
the
yes,
road.
Yes, that Nordell bought. They bought that property across the road. They had 320 acres. You see, that was under the old rule. Then they made the new rule up 160 acres.
And that was after 1940 or about
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about some of your neighbors. I guess your neighbors were people like Mr. Badger and then Holmes, Petey, judging from all the streets around
here. Okay, at that time, the neighbors were, Nordales were our closest neighbor, of course, right here, because he told you about them homesteading there. Okay, and then Harry Badger and Walter Creek up the road, right next to them, and then Jack Horn right on the other side of them. And Petey's came out, well, there was Joy's, Lou Joy, down the road here, down at 4 Mile. Mm-hmm. Lou and Gladys Joy. And they had four children, two boys. Bill is still living on the original homestead. He's the only one that is.
He's still here.
Bill and Ellen are.
What was Mr. Badger like? Real entrepreneur? He was one of the successful farmers in this area, or he at least made some of his money that way.
He was a tall, large man, and as I told you earlier, he was more or less of a PR man. He was into politics. He sold real estate, and he was very busy in different organizations. Walter Crick, who lived in the same house with him, did all of his farming for him, and they had big strawberry patches that every spring, when the strawberries were ready, everybody from town would come pick them.
Oh, the original.
Yes, right, the original You Pick Farm, and then he would have a big dinner that Walter and he had cooked for everybody, and I always remember the cream potatoes, peas, and carrots, as well as strawberry shortcake.
Oh, my, if you're hungry, just thinking about it.
Right.